I grew up in Flint, Michigan, which was really gangster. Like, I had to act like I was gangster when I was trying to go to art class so that they wouldn't, you know, wouldn't threaten me.
One-on-One with Chris Fade, the podcast.
It's going to be raw.
Good night, America! Show them what Harlem is all about!
I go home, she's sitting on the couch, watching TV. I walk over, got next to her. I said, "You good?" Man, I knew we'd be together forever. You see that?
Yeah.
All rolling. 3, 2, 1.
Terry Crews, I'm happy to have you here, man.
Oh, man. I'm happy to be here, brother. I love you, man.
I love you, too. Isn't that crazy? Like, we've only connected recently, but for me, it's a respect of, like, what you've done and what you've achieved, but the human that you are.
Oh, man. Well, likewise. I mean, I followed you on social media, fell in love with Dubai, and, you know, your presence here is so huge and amazing, and it's, you know, I just love what the city is. I love its culture. I love, you know, what's wild is that knowing that I'm on the other side of the world, the part that I didn't grow up in, and I feel at home. That's crazy to me. You know what I mean? And it's just a beautiful thing, man. I always felt like I was a citizen of the world, and this place represents the world more than anything.
I love that you've noticed that, because you visited, I think the first time you came to Dubai was last year?
Yeah, last January. But I've been back 7-8 times since
then.
Crazy.
But there's something about the city, and it's crazy because some people ask me, I'm originally from Australia and I came to Dubai 17 years ago, and they ask me, are they paying you to talk about Dubai and how good it is? I get asked that.
Sure.
And I'm like, no. And they're like, but you always seem to do it. And I'm like, yeah, because I love the city. And I love what it stands for, and I love what it represents, and I love the people that are in it. And I love the fact that you've only been here, what, a handful of times, but you feel it, right?
Dude, absolutely. Well, one thing I noticed, yep. And for me, I'm really big on environment.
Mm-hmm.
If you're around the wrong environment, it's very, very hard to make it. Not that it's impossible, but... You know, you pretty much, if you're around 9 broke, complaining, mean friends, you're probably the 10th one. You know what I mean? It's really, really hard to make it. But I guard my environment, okay? I am ruthless with my environment because I've seen, and I'm 56 years old, and I've seen, and I was in sports at its highest level. Entertainment at its highest level. I've watched people come and go, but I also watched their circle. And I was like, dude, I can't, you start to realize there's a lot of things that are common. And it's like, when you see the same mistakes being made over and over again, you see this entourage and the guy thinks he has an entourage, but in fact, the entourage has him. And I said, man, this is why, when I look at Dubai and I look at the culture and I look at the environment, it's healthy. It's healthy. One thing I like to say about just this part of the world is that you here in Dubai, you have the right to respect everyone. But in America, a lot of times you have the right to disrespect people. It's protected.
Yep.
You know, you have the right to cuss somebody out. You have the right to insult people. You have the right to in a lot of ways, cheat people in certain ways. And I just felt like, man, you know, it's weird because I remember a young lady by the name of Amanda Nguyen, and I got to speak at the UN in regards to what she did. I'm going to get real serious here because this young lady...
No, that's what I want. I want to hear that.
No, this young lady, she went to Harvard, and she was raped in college. And she was thrown to the wolves. Again, you have the right to disrespect her. And she couldn't find justice. So she literally made the Sexual Assault Survivors Bill of Rights. Because what she found is that the rights only went to a perpetrator. Like,
why have they built that?
Well, again, you're talking about a place You know, when you're looking at lawyers, people who are looking at things that how to exploit situations, you know, one thing is in California, you know, if you, there's been a bona fide facts where someone could try to rob your house and get on your roof, break a hole in the roof, and he sue you for having a faulty roof and win.
So when I heard that story.
You know what I mean?
Like, when I heard that, I was like, that can't be true. And then I did a bit of research. I was like, this is legit. How have we created? Now, I love America. My wife's American. I love America. My kid's half American. But I'm like, how do you build a society? How do you have a place where someone can break into your home, cut themselves on a knife that you have in your kitchen, and then they can come and get you and they can sue you?
Listen, I love America, but I'm for justice.
Yep.
You know, and I think there's this, a thing where people start to realize, hey, man, that's not fair. This is not correct. I love America so much that I'll say it. Mm. You know what I mean? I'll call people on it. Like, guys, you got to protect the people who are the most vulnerable.
Yeah.
That's what we have to do.
Yeah.
And because I love the country. You know what I'm saying? But when I started to travel and I started to see, you know, what works and what doesn't, the safety here blew me away. Mm-hmm. Like, you have to understand, like, you know, coming up in LA, I have to think about so many things. Who's watching? You know, I used to run in the street. I love to run. But there was time I would get followed. And I'd have to run past my own house.
Oh, so they didn't know that you lived there.
I'm running forever because the guy's still following me. So I'm like, man, I can't go.
San Diego. You get to San Diego. I'm like, I'm nearly home.
You know, I can't go. But the thing is,
was that a fan? Were they fans?
I don't know who it was, but they're following you. And it's like, you know, you don't know if it's good or if it's bad.
Did you confront them ever?
No. Thank goodness they got tired. Thank goodness I took enough streets and side streets that they finally, you know, went away.
Wow.
But it made me think, man, like the level of thinking that it goes to be try to be safe.
Yeah.
You know, it shouldn't be this way. It should not be this way. The fact is, and when I come here, I literally don't have to worry about someone breaking in and stealing things, and I want my phone and my things and blah, 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 blah. Or, you know, driving a nice car, you get followed.
Yeah.
You know, but there's many times my wife had to take those side streets because she felt like, oh, I drove the nice car, you know.
Well, I got told now when we go to the States, they told me don't hire a nice car. They said just get a regular car, because if you're driving something nice, a Range, a G or something like that, you could get followed.
It's
and so
reality.
That's a really unfortunate reality. Like, you know, last week I had a couple of teenagers knock on my door. They found where I lived, right? Mm. And so it's like 9:30 at night. I'm in bed. I go to bed pretty early because of the morning show that I do here. And doorbell rang. It's on my phone. I've got it on the video. And I'm like, who's knocking on my door at 9:30 at night?
Wow.
And I just see these like two 16-year-old kids at my door.
Oh.
I'm like, what's going on here? So I go down. I open the door. They're like, oh, Mr. Fade. I'm like, what, you knocking on my door at 9:30 at night? They're like, oh, we just found out that you lived here. We wanted to come and say hello.
Okay.
So I says, like, that's probably not a cool thing to do. A, you know, right. Live at someone's house at 9:30 at night.
But they're young kids.
But living in Dubai, I had zero fear.
Right.
I didn't have that fear. Right. Now, if I was in LA, even possibly back home in Sydney, and someone's knocking at my door and there's two 16-year-olds, I'm probably like going, all right, where's the bat?
Yeah.
Let's go down. Let's just go protect the family. Got to make sure. And that's one thing that I kind of don't take for granted living here. Every day I'm like, that's a beautiful thing.
And I'm going to be real, man. Like, you know, even in America, people will say, well, you're just hypervigilant and the whole thing. Well, you have to be.
Yeah.
You have to be. Because you don't want to be, you know, I have too much to lose. You see what I'm saying? Like, I've been married 36 years. I got 5 kids. There's too much that I want to keep safe for them. You know what I mean? I don't want to hear the story of how one of my kids or my wife or anything was hurt by anything. And I am the guardian of my family, you know? So there's nothing wrong. I don't apologize for feeling like I want to protect the kids and my wife and the people that I love. But one thing that got me when I came here was that all I could think about was, I didn't have to think about that stuff. And I was like, I could just think about what we're going to do today and what opportunities there were. And it was such a relief. Like, you're talking about the blood pressure just going,
chill.
And you don't know that because you're so...
You're in it all the time.
You're in it all the time. And man, listen, and you got to understand, that's LA. I grew up in Flint, Michigan, which was really gangster. Like, when I went to school, man, it was drug dealers and gang members and pedophiles, and you had to duck, dodge. I had to code switch. I had to act like I was gangster when I was trying to go to art class so that they wouldn't threaten me. You know, man, that stuff makes you tired.
Yeah.
You know, tired.
Because life shouldn't be like that, right?
Oh, and then when you get out of it, when you go somewhere where there's not, you don't have to worry. Man, it's such a, you know, there's a lot of strain that has come from even social media that's brought on to people. You know what I'm saying? People starting to experience, like, mental health is coming from carrying that worry, carrying those thoughts. And, you're worried about too much. And why should I be doing this? I love peace. I love peace. I think everyone should have it. I think that it's a right. And that's what I love about this place, because they protect your peace. You know what I mean? And I think it's one of the things that, you know, and I'm sure, just like any city, there are issues, there's problems, there's stuff, but you're going to get through it. But the fact that when my family came and I didn't have to worry about my wife was like, I'm going to the mall, and it's 10 o'clock at night. And she could do it. Yeah, it was no problem. Fear. That was unthinkable in LA. I mean, where are you going? You know?
Yeah, like that. And that's the thing. Like, my kids, you know, they go to the mall at like 9:30, 10 o'clock at night. I have zero fear.
I know.
I know that. And I'll go to bed sometimes, but I'll know that I'll wake up and, you know, I mean, I still do the check. I just make sure when I leave to go to work the next morning, I'm like, yeah, they're in their bed. But, you know, that you have that. It's crazy because Lindsay Lohan, you know, moved here many years ago.
Yep.
And her and I have connected over the years. And actually, we just messaged each other yesterday. And I think one of the reasons why was to escape just everything that was L.A.
Listen, man.
And
you're talking about also here, you know, the social media stuff. When someone takes a picture of you and wants to dog you out or whatever, yeah. I mean, you're allowed to do all of that.
You can't do that here.
Oh, you can't do it. See, man, you understand, man. It's this place and Monaco is another place where you can't do it. Yeah, there's only a couple places in the world. Yeah. You know, I have a good friend who lives in the UK, man, and they tap your phones and put your business in the paper.
Yeah, it's crazy.
It's like, they'll take pictures of your kids and put it out.
Yeah.
Who says you got a right to do that?
And you can't say anything about it.
What I'm saying.
Yeah,
dude, I'm sitting here going, hey, man, who told you you had the right to disturb someone else's peace? Even if they're famous, even if they're whatever, or successful, that doesn't mean that you get carte blanche at their life.
Yeah.
Because they don't get, I just think there's a level of respect that's missing. And I want that. I want that for me.
Can
I want
they
that
get
for
it?
Everyone.
Do you think that, let's talk California, do you think they can get it? Like, what do they do to change it?
I don't know. I don't know. I'm not going to stick around for it. I mean, look, first of all, I know how to take care of myself. I know I take care of my own family and the whole thing. Some of the times the laws, you know, you have to be a politician and do that. And I don't want to ever do that. I'm never going to get into that kind of thing.
Never? Did it ever cross your mind?
Dude, it's a losing proposition.
Okay.
First of all, politics is games. Politics is what's popular, not what's actually right. You know, you're talking about the king, homecoming king and queen. Did they deserve it? No. It's a lobby. You know, it's something that...
Smart,
they're the cutest, whatever. It's like, again, trying to run a business by who has the biggest bench press. Does that mean he's the smartest?
Yeah.
No, but I got the biggest bench press. I get to say what's going on. Hey, man, that's politics. In so many ways, that's politics. The guy who could talk the smoothest, do the thing. Now, we need it, but that's not me.
Sure.
Like, that's just not where I'm going to go. I like to be the guy who... And this is my belief, man, and I'm going to say this is going to be on the Terry Crews log line for his whole life is the best thing you can do for the whole world is make the most of yourself. Understand? What happens is everybody's like, no, you need to make the best of everything else. No, you need to, you know, make the most of this political party. No, make the most of this business. No, make the most of this city. No, it's yourself. Every day I have to work on myself just to get a little bit better, a little bit smarter, a little more connected, and I will improve the world. It's like clean up your own area.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, the whole building is clean. You know what I mean? I did that, man, because I had to change my whole life. I was a guy, and this is what I think I believe. At one time or another in every man's life, he's either a fool, a victim, or a king. Now, I was all three. There was a time when I was like a fool. I'm like, wow, you know, this is how the world should be and this and this. And I would do a bunch of stupid stuff and just expect everyone else to clean up the mess. And I was a fool, man. I was a fool. And then what happens is you make a lot of mess and you mess up a lot of things. You've hurt a lot of people. Then you switch to victim mode. Because you're trying to defend yourself. So you say, oh man, you know, the reason I did that is because I was poor and I didn't have anything and I was black and I would look where I came from and all of a sudden look at all the problems and look at I'm this and that. And that. You could, and let me tell you, and the thing about the victim mode is that they're legitimate excuses. It's racism. It's or it's this or the fact that I was poor and you will have a table that's always full of excuses when you're a victim and they're legit. They're not fake. They're real. So you can always live there and you can be a victim forever. And usually people who are stuck in the victim mode, they can go all the way until they live their whole lives as a victim. But then there's the king stage. Now, king stage is when you take full responsibility, 100% for everything in your life, good and bad. And when I say king, it's literally a kingdom. It's literally like you are in the courtroom and all of a sudden you can say, you, out of my room, yeah. Out of my court. And you stay. That's king stage, not victim. It's like, hey man, I am 100% responsible for my success, but I'm also responsible for my failures. When you can do that, you're a king. It's you. So what you need to do is stop making excuses and start taking responsibility. Start saying, if something is in my life I don't like, I can change it. The most powerful thing I can say is no and mean it. Dude. It's so life-changing, but so many people mess with that. Like, because you can get manipulated and boundaries crossed. You know, I've had things where I've had to, I made a commitment, but I always know that something else came and I had to just say, I'm sorry, I'm not going to be able to make that. Well, you promised. And there's this pull and it's manipulative. But if the situation had switched, they'd be like, sorry, can't do it. But I know for a fact, wait, hold on. I get to say no. I'm allowed to change my mind. Hmm. I'm allowed to make decisions that's best for me. And because I'm working on me, it's not about you. It's about who I am. And if everyone in the room just concentrated on what they can do for themselves. And listen, you know what? I heard a great quote. It was, you know, I can do more for other people if my own needs are met. Isn't that wild?
It's beautiful.
What people think, though, is that, no, you need to give everything to everybody else and then leave you without, now you have nothing. No, you got to put the mask on yourself first.
Were you a people? I feel like you wanted to always please people.
That's what I was.
Yeah, and I've gone through that journey myself where I felt like I've always needed to please everyone around me. And it's only recently that I've started to, you know, this kingdom thing that you've discussed right now, I think I've just kind of entered it in the last 12 to 18 months where I've started to say, no, not feel guilty.
Yeah.
Because you feel guilty, right?
No, listen, hey man, this is what thing that blows everybody's mind. The right decision most of the times, doesn't feel good. It feels horrible. So what happens is people know they're making the right decision, but it feels so bad they feel like they're not making the right decision. Mm-hmm. No. In fact, sometimes the worst decision feels great. Just please everybody. But man, once you know that, wait, I'm making the right move and it's gonna feel horrible. Now you can really deal with life as it is. And like you said, you feel guilty. You feel like I let people down. I feel like, hey man, nobody's even thinking about you. You know, you think they're thinking about you, but they're not. Yeah. They're like, I got stuff to do and internet. But a lot of times they'll put the burdens on you and put that thing on you so you make you feel guilty and make you feel like you owe them and all that stuff. But you don't owe anybody anything. You don't owe anybody else anything but to love them. That's all you owe. You know what I mean? And love is unconditional. It's free. But trust is earned.
Well said, man. As a father, you're a father of five beautiful children, married 36 years.
36 years.
We're going to come back to that because I'm divorced. So I want to come back to that 36 years. Do you feel responsibility of having to look after and make sure you're the provider, not only for, have you ever sat back and gone, how many people is Terry Crews responsible for?
Right.
If anything ever happened to Terry, what happens? The domino effect.
Yeah.
Because I did that recently. It gave me anxiety.
Yeah.
It was like, how many people rely on me?
Yeah.
And there was a lot.
Yeah.
And then I got anxious. Has that ever happened? Has it crossed your mind or you passed that? Or in the kingdom, that doesn't worry you?
No. It's funny you say this. My wife and I had this conversation on the phone probably 3 days ago.
Okay.
There was some moratoriums we needed to lay down. There was some people, because all my kids are grown, okay? My oldest is 38 years old. My youngest is 19, okay? And again, we've been married for a long time, but we started to know where the boundaries had crossed, where people were expecting financial help, but with no expectations. So the things that we asked for, like, you know, they were like, I don't want to do that, but the check, please send the check.
Is this the kids?
This is kids.
Man, okay. Because I had the same discussion with mine are younger, but go.
Oh,
so,
no.
So your kids, even at the age that they are at?
Yes. And there are things that we said, okay, listen, because this is one, I'll be honest, I'm just going to be forthwith, because one of the things is, you know, sometimes we're like, okay, can we do family counseling? You know? And some of the kids were like, I don't want to do that. And it's like, well, if you're going to get some money from me, if you want, expect any help or whatever, this is what we are requiring.
Agreed. I'm that decision as a father, 100%.
And if you don't want to do it, then
cool,
you don't get the money. But you can't expect to get all this. Now, I've broken that. Like, you have to understand, I'm still 56. I'm Mr. King. But all of a sudden, I realize, I was giving them it anyway. That's, you got to always check these boundaries. You know what I mean? And I realized that's what I was talking to my wife about. I said, hey, if we don't get this, what we're expecting, we do have to cut it off. And that's hard because it's going to hurt.
Yeah, if you cut it off, do you think they'd cut you guys off?
I don't know. Listen, it's a thing we don't know because you want to be liked. You want to be the parent. You want to be, but my thing is you got to be willing to take that risk. And there was a time when I wasn't. I wanted to be like this dad who, but the one thing I started to realize, and that's what I told my wife, is that it's looking like I care more about how I look as opposed to what's best for them. Because, you know, that they're going to know that's Terry Crews' daughter or son who needs this help. You know, as opposed to just letting them feel the consequences of their actions, because that's the only way you can really help people, you know?
Yeah, like it's so, I got my two daughters who are, you remember, you can give me some advice on it. They're 15 and 13. This is on a much smaller scale, but I feel like it could be the future for me. They were meant to come to a party of a friend of mine. Just last weekend, they were meant to come with me. We agreed. Mm-hmm. We're going. Cool. Last minute, they bailed on me. Well, they were giving me like, we don't want to go, and why do we have to go, and I don't want to do, to the point where I said, you know what? Don't come. But I'm angry. I'm upset, but don't come. Whatever. And then the next day, they're at school, and they've got like a canteen card where I just top up cash in that canteen. They both messaged me. We got no money in our canteen card. Could you please send some? And I just replied with, nope. And that's the first time I've ever, and the response was, what do you mean? We're hungry. We need to eat. I said, yeah, there's food in the kitchen. Take it next time.
That's right.
And it was really hard for me to send them the money for the canteen. I felt guilty the whole day. And I even envisioned like one of my kids borrowing, can I have food? My dad, we don't have any money. Chris Fade's daughter doesn't have any food at school. But that was the first time that I did it. And then we, you know, I sort of went on strike.
Yeah.
And then I sat them down. And they're only, they're 15 and 13. They're great kids and I love them. But I said to them, like, it's a two-way street. It's not going to just be one way the entire time. Dad, I need this. Dad, can we buy back? Dad, can I fly here? Can we go there? And me just, yeah, sure. Let's keep going. Cool. Yeah. Because I feel like I'm not building anything for them.
Yeah.
So the fact that you've cut, well, you're thinking about doing the cut.
Well, yeah, we're going to do it. I mean,
if they don't do the.
We've done it before and then they corrected themselves and then we have to do it again. Because, you know, life goes on. It's almost like, you know, have you ever been in a part of the house where you clean all the main ones and there's one room that just, you left it alone, but whoa, what? I didn't even know this thing was this dirty, you know? And that's kind of thing. It's like you can't look at everything with the same kind of like eye. And this is something that kind of came to us like, oh man, I think we're enabling here, you know? Now, I have to say this, with kids, there's a level of responsibility,
sure,
a whole thing, but we're all adults.
I don't plan on I don't want to have to give my kids money at the age of 25, 26. I mean, I'm always happy to help them in situations,
yeah.
But I'm hoping that I'm doing enough now to let them know that daddy ain't here to, but did you think if you went back, so let's say there might, give me something here. Yeah, well, let me know what I should do, maybe.
The best advice I heard, and this is from a lady by the name of Mel Robbins, it was her book, The Let Them Theory. And she said, you have to treat people like they can. Because if you always help them, you're treating them like they can't. And I went, whoa,
yeah,
that's deep.
Yeah.
You're showing you believe in your kids. You know, it's not the other way around.
Yeah, when you don't.
When you help them all, like every 5 minutes, you're not really trusting them. You know, you have to let them feel it and feel and learn, and they'll shock you with what they can do because they can. You did. You see what I mean? Like you went up from Australia and got it going, and boom, boom. There was because there was a time when nobody was coming to help you.
Yeah,
you understand what I mean? Yeah. That's the same thing with me. I mean, I'll never forget, me and my wife, man, we were at about a year back in 2001, we lost our house. There was nobody to call.
This is 2001?
2001. I had already done some TV and I started acting in like 1998 and went about 3 years and we bought a house, but it was too much for us. And there was nobody to call. Like, all of a sudden, you gotta make it work, man. And we ran around, grabbed rentals, and did our thing, and took that hit so hard, but we knew there was no going back home. There was no going back to parents and whatever. We were like, hey, we're gonna die out here if we have to. But that mentality takes you, that's why, to me, it's so great about the immigrant mentality, because you go out there and you just gotta make it happen. And all of a sudden, magic.
There's no other option. No,
you don't have anybody to call. You don't have, but see, when kids have people to call and you can press the easy button and
Well, you know what they say? They say that my parents were immigrants, right? They migrated from Lebanon during the war in the 70s to Australia. They needed to get out. So they needed to find a place to found. They found Sydney. Great, beautiful. They both hustled. They both worked really hard, right? Came with not a lot. build a good life for us as kids, right? But what they say is that kids that, our kids, let's say, they will have money, right? Because they get it from us.
Right, right.
But we've learned to work because of our, for me, it was my parents. I saw them have to grind. So I think I got that from my parents.
Yeah.
So we have that. Our kids see us working, but they're given everything.
Right.
Which means their kids will lose it all.
Right.
So everything that we're making, our kids will get, but their kids won't have that same fight, and the money goes. They're saying it's a cycle.
That's true. So, I'm seeing it happen.
Yeah.
You know, and it makes a lot of sense. Listen, that was my mistake in so many ways, just because you want your kids to not have it hard. You know, I remember wanting things and not being able to have them. And so you could really just come and do that. And it feels like love. But there was a point where I had to realize, whoa, this is enablement. This is not helping them. You know what I mean? Especially if you're not getting, you know, the results you're talking about. Like when it's like, yeah, thanks, here's my money. Where you know, I started to see where I instead of becoming a priority, I was a convenience. Didn't feel good on my side. And you go, oh, you just want the check? Whew. You didn't come over to say hi? You know, like, we got to get this straight here. You know what I mean? Listen, I have beautiful kids. But it can happen to anybody.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, but my kids ain't perfect. Just like dad's not perfect. So it became a thing where, okay, I have to enact this boundary. Remember, the law and the rules are boundaries. The boundaries always protect. They keep out. They don't let in. But they also protect you. And there's certain boundaries that you have to put. And you start to realize money doesn't fix problems. It just doesn't. You know what I mean? You feel like you just put money on something. And what you're doing, unless, you know, it's the whole, you know, teach a man to fish as opposed to just giving him food. Yeah. You know what I mean? Because once he knows how to fish, he can go get his own. And I realized, man, and I think I've done my kids a disservice at times. You know what I mean? I'm guilty. Where it's like, hey, man, look, we're stars. We're doing this. You know, they go to the theme park, and we stay for 3 days, and there's no lines. And I'm like, and then they go with their other buddies, and they're like, we were in the line for 3 hours.
Exactly. I'm like, and that's what I get now.
You know?
I get the call when they're at the theme park. Dad, can you call XYZ to get us through the line?
Right.
Like, no.
Yeah. You see?
Like, I'm not just going to call them up and
come
do that.
On.
But you want to do that as a dad, though, as well. Doesn't it make you happy? Like, you feel good about it?
It's so weird. It's hard. Dude, listen. Life is complex.
Yep.
It is. We're all dealing with our own triggers and phobias and things we grew up with and, you know, and we try to pass it on. But remember, you get to press a reset button anytime you want.
I learned from this, the kingdom. Do you have any phobias?
You know, my fear is literally being broke. I hustle all day long. Like, I don't mind work. I don't mind going. I always have a phobia of, man.
You're not gonna be broke.
But this is the thing. It's a phobia because you feel like you don't want anybody to snatch it from you. So you're always, and I have to I have to stop and say, rest, Terry, rest. Enjoy. I'm that guy who goes somewhere and everything's a business trip. I mean, from vacations to everything. Like, how much business can we get? You know, and instead of just sitting down and enjoying, that's a phobia. That's a phobia because when I was a kid, I felt panic. Like, the fridge was empty, man. See, if you ever felt that, that's hard, man. That's a trigger. You're like, oh, we don't have it. Well, and wanting something, man, we can't do it. We can't go. We don't have it. And you're like, oh, man, wanting to do something and the rest of the school is doing it and you can't go and you're the one left back. See, that's how they did it where I was from. Like, the parents could pay for so-and-so, and they went on a field trip, and you sitting in the classroom with the teacher.
And you didn't have the money.
And you didn't have the money to go. Oh, dude, that's guts. That hurts. Like, pain. I said, I'm never going to be broke again. Like, you know what I'm saying? That kind of pain. Woo.
Do you find, I'm a better man working and keeping busy. When I'm not working and keeping busy, I feel like my mind will start to do like dumb stuff. And do you find like you keep?
Yeah, like you said, the phobia stuff. Yeah. I have a phobia of getting out of shape.
Getting what?
Out of shape. I notice like, oh, what am I eating? What am I doing?
So yeah, I just saw you have that coffee and put, what was it?
MCT oil. It's basically coconut oil.
And I said, why are you putting that in your coffee? And you said, it's going
to
what?
It actually teaches your body to burn fat. That's because you give it good fat. It's not bad fat. That comes with donuts and
Like the avocado oil for like the...
Yes.
I mean, so you're always... Have you always been this? Because you... I think when people think of Terry Crews, the flexing of the chest and the... They're moving right now. But people are renowned for just knowing how fit you are. So are you fearful that you won't look that way? I mean, you're 56 years old.
Yeah.
You look incredible. But there's going to come a point.
Yeah. You know? Well, it already came. No. The point came.
What?
You have to understand, look, man. I used to run like a gazelle. I could get on a treadmill, and I would run at 8.0 for a half hour. I would do 4 miles and a half hour. And it's a 30-minute sprint. And get off like pow and go right to set. Ha! One day I got on that sucker, I was like, ow, the tendons. Yes. They don't come back like they used to. I could fall off a roof, Chris, get up and be like, man, get what y'all talking about. I stubbed my toe now. I'm like,
What age do you feel like there was? Because I'm 45.
Yes.
And I felt when I hit 40, 41. I used to be able to train pretty heavy at the gym, lift, back it up the next day. Didn't feel a little bit of soreness, but like I was able to keep going.
Yep.
Now I feel like if I lift too heavy, my neck out a little bit. Oh, this hurts a little bit more. If I play paddle, have you played paddle yet?
No.
Okay, we're going to get you in a paddle. If you're living in the, if you're going to come and spend more time in Dubai, you have to play paddle. So playing paddle the next day, I know it. I wake up at 4 a.m. and I am like a boy, so stiff. My legs don't move.
Yep.
And I'm like, why am I so? I'm like, oh, I played an hour of paddle.
Yep.
So when, what age was it? Do you feel like that the switch went on or?
Well, this is what happened. I remember when I started Brooklyn Nine-Nine. So that had to be, I was about, I'm 56 now. We had 8 years of that thing. It was around 43, 44 years old. And all of a sudden, my body wasn't doing the same things it used to do. And I was going, whoa, what is happening? I noticed everything I ate was going, whoop. I was bloated, I was whatever. But then I started, and this is back, I've been doing this for almost 15 years, is intermittent fast.
You do it.
So I don't eat till 2 p.m. I haven't had breakfast for 15 years.
What time will you have your dinner?
The latest I eat is 10 p.m.
And then you won't eat till 2 the next day.
And I do a 16-hour fast.
Coffee's okay.
Water. I have electrolytes, that kind of thing. And I have vitamins. But usually I do fast. And what that made a big difference, made a huge difference. But I have to say it was more so about discipline than it is about diet. But I think that when I look at the science of what that was, it was, you know, autophagy and it rebuilt the cells and the whole thing. But, you know, your metabolism slows down. And when you, 3 meals a day, hey man, it's packing it on. I don't want to let it go.
Yeah.
And I was like, whoa, this is crazy. So, it started to affect my workout, started affecting who I was. And so the phobia became like, man, this is not what I like. But then now, this is what's so beautiful, though. This is what's so beautiful. I stopped being judgmental about myself, because what it is like you go, oh man, I'm losing it. No, it's like, Terry, adjust. The key, the the people that are really going to make it are the people who know how to adapt and adjust. You have to adapt to a new world. There are people who are like, AI is going to take over. I hate it. I hate it. But if you don't adapt, you're going to be on the, you're going to miss it. And your body, who you are, you're older now, recognize. I had to be comfortable with, like, okay, instead of running and pounding that treadmill and getting on the street, I have to be comfortable doing the Stairmaster. Low impact.
I started doing that.
Powerful and adjust, adapt, change.
But there's that, they say the Stairmaster is like one of the most fat-burning machines. Right?
Brother. Oh my God, I'm dripping sweat. Yeah. I'm still, and it burns the thigh. It's like crazy. I burn the same amount of calories, but it's lower impact.
Are you still lifting?
Oh yeah.
Because you look like you're still lifting heavy.
I do, but I have compound exercises, and then I have days where it's all isolations, very light.
Are you doing like back and buys one day, chest and tries one day? You're doing body parts?
I enjoy it. Yeah. I enjoy it. Going to the gym, though, is my therapy. Mm-hmm. I get to think my whole day out. But while I was coming in here, I was like, what am I going to say to Chris? And I'm in there doing my deadlifts and doing my stuff. And, I love fitness because, again, with my log line, it's like literally it's making the most of yourself. And that doesn't mean you have to lift the entire gym and do what you did when you were 20. No, I want to be the best 56-year-old me. Not 56-year-old period, but what's the best 56-year-old Terry Crews? What does that look like? And all I can do is just do the best I can do every day. And I started to be easy on myself because this is another thing that changed my life. All about that fool, victim, king stuff. I also learned that I needed to speak better to myself. I would literally be calling myself an idiot and be calling myself dumb and, well, how could you be so stupid? But there's a thing that helped me in therapy where I had a picture of myself as a 6-year-old boy. And you have to look at that boy and say, whatever you would say to him, you have to say to yourself. Would you ever call that little 6-year-old boy an idiot?
Never.
Never. Would you ever look at him and say, you're stupid?
Yep, never.
No, you say, hey, man, you made a mistake. It's okay. It's okay. Let's just get over. You're a kid. You're a child. At no time in my life had I ever stopped being that 6-year-old boy. That's still me. It's just that's just 50 years later. But I realized, whoa, talk to yourself. Talk to yourself like you would talk to yourself at 6. You're raising yourself. Think about it.
It's crazy that you say that because I was doing a speech the other day where I said, we're always so kind to other people, but to ourselves,
brutal.
We can be an absolute ass.
Brutal. No.
So I implemented in my life a couple of years ago of waking up, which some people say it could be stupid, but I do give myself positive affirmations in the morning. You're good. Or even when I go to bed, you did a really good job today, Chris. Well done. Not many people could have done what you did. Well done. Yes. Well done. Let's do it again tomorrow.
Yes.
Like I felt like it makes you feel better.
You're parenting yourself.
Yeah.
Think about it.
Yeah.
Because there's a kid inside you. There's a person inside you that's still growing. Mm. You don't ever, who tells you, there's not a point. I don't think you grow up. I think you just grow out, like you have a life that ends eventually, but you just are still growing, dude. Yeah. But someone has told everybody, like, you should know better, you should do this, but do you know everything? Is there ever a moment where you know you have all knowledge? No, you're not that guy. So I promise you, I don't know everything and you don't either. So let's learn. But if you parent yourself, if you really talk to yourself like, caring and really love yourself, it's not a bad thing, man. It's, you know, there's people in the world that make you feel like that's selfish, but it's not. Remember, you know, if the best you can help other people, but you got to get your needs met first.
Yeah,
you know, and that allows you to really bless your family. You know what I have to tell myself? I'm going to give the special gift of being fit to my family. Because imagine if I never took care of myself and I got sick. They'd have to take care of me. And all the money would go to hospital bills and da, 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 da. So I'm going to give them a special gift of, you don't have to worry about me because I am fit, I'm in shape, I'm healthy, I'm going to the doctor, I'm getting colonoscopies, I'm seeing, you know, I'm doing my blood work, I'm looking at where I'm at. And if there's any, I want to say this too, back in 2020 during the pandemic, my wife was diagnosed with breast cancer. And that hit me so hard. You don't understand. Hit me so hard, I was to my knees, man. I was going, I never thought we would ever face something like that. On top of COVID and all this other stuff. And she was so brave. She was so, she said, Terry, get up. She said, we're going to fight. We're going to fight. She went in there and got a double mastectomy and just fought this cancer. And now she's 100% cancer free.
Brilliant.
But she knew I got to take care of myself. And she became this example. And I said, I got to do the same thing. You know, because as a man, sometimes you go, well, you know, yeah, the doctor stuff, I'll take care of myself later. You know, it'll be all right. No, man, no, that's a gift to your family. By getting get your eyes checked, get your body checked, get your whole, you know, find out where you are, man. Find out, because this is what's so crazy. Like, the colonoscopy thing is just one example, but if you find it, it's the most preventable cancer of all time.
Prevention.
It's so preventable.
It's one of my friends is that's what he does. He's a doctor. Yeah. And he tells me all the time, he's like, I get pissed off. I said, why? He goes, because if they just came and saw me 3 years later, 3 years before, they'd be alive today. He's lost patience.
Isn't that dude?
He's lost patience.
Real.
Yeah, it's real. I had a shout out to my brother Ziggy, one of my closest mates. He passed away. He got it, I think, at the age of 37, colon cancer. It's one of the biggest killers. But then on social media right now, have you seen the conspiracy theory?
No.
Of what colonoscopies do?
No. Yeah, I don't even want to hear it. I don't even know. There's not. It can't be.
There's a conspiracy theory that a colonoscopy can cause the cancer. And that, like, blew my mind because that's where social media, I feel, is hurting us.
That's...
But this video had like 1.1 million likes. It was shared. I'm like, there are now going to be people who won't get a colonoscopy because of this, which is scary because I know for a fact my doctor, I've had two. I'm 45, already had two.
Yep.
My grandmother had colon cancer, so it could run in the family.
Yep.
So I'm always about prevention is obviously better than the cure side of things.
Yep.
And longevity is everything.
Yep.
Do you think we're going to live longer? Do you think with all the technology and... I mean,
well, we already are. Hey, yeah, man, average lifespan is like 75, 80 years old. Dude, people used to die at 30. Mm. And they'd be like, I'm old. I'm 29. Mm-hmm. You're like, what? You got to understand, man. We got better.
Yeah, you see old photos. Have you seen old photos of people who were like 35 years old in 1937? They look 70.
They look 70.
You're like, what's going on there?
You're like, yeah, he died at 31. You're like, 31? That's a 31-year-old man? Are you kidding me? Like, dude.
You remember the show Cheers?
Yes.
So they went through the characters?
Oh, I
don't. And their ages?
They're doing that with AI now. And you could see it on the thing.
Yeah, but during the filming of Cheers, they were like on an average age of, I think, mid-30s. They all look 62.
They did.
You know what I mean?
All of them.
I was
all
like, how
them.
Did that even happen? Going back to your wife, I'm glad she's okay. And I'm glad things are good. 36 years of marriage.
Yeah.
But you real famous, Terry.
Yeah.
Terry Crews, you would have had...
Hey, man, I'm going to be real, real. At year 20, our marriage was over.
Okay.
It was over. Because there were some things I had done that I never told her. And I said, I'm going to take it to my grave. And, you know, I was two people. It was, you know, and this was the thing. I was very successful at the time. But the problem with that is success is the warmest place to hide. Meaning you can hide. No one's going to call you on anything because you're successful. You did it. You're famous. You got money. And I always tell my wife, like, what are you complaining about, the whole thing? But it was things I wasn't telling her. And she felt that, and she knew that. And she called me on it. And she was like, what is it I don't know about you, Terry Crews? And I remember telling her that I had cheated on her. Because one reason why I told her was that I was tired of holding the secret. I was tired. And I felt like we were going to break up anyway, because I felt like Hollywood is eventual. Like, to me, this is part of the story, you know, even as an athlete or as a famous person, here comes the divorce. And I heard myself talking that way. And then I said, because again, I became victim. I was like, well, you know, if I hadn't done this and this and this, and this. But I realized, wait a minute. It's you, man. It's you. It ain't her, ain't anybody else. It's you. You lied. And the question I would always ask to her was, why didn't she believe me? Why didn't she believe me? Everything changed when the question started to be, why am I lying? See that? That's, why am I lying to her? All of a sudden, the focus became, because the other question is really about her. Why don't she believe me? It's about what you're supposed to believe whatever I'm saying, even though I'm lying, but you're supposed to believe it. But now, why am I lying? It's because I want to keep her. It's because I have no integrity. It's because I want to hide this. I don't want her to know the real me. And the fact is that we were married and she didn't know who I was. Even that one secret blows up. It grows. It festers. You know, you can't just sweep stuff under the carpet. It starts to smell. You know what I mean? Like, oh, what's that? What's going on? And dude, I got the best advice I ever got in my life. It was a friend of mine. He said, Terry, because we got to understand, when I told her, she said, I'm out. I'm done. It's so over.
Was it in person? Or
no, it was over the phone. I was working in New York and she was in California.
20 years you were together?
Yeah, 20 years. You're telling her on the... just celebrated our 20th anniversary, probably.
Why on the phone?
Because I was working. I was doing a show, and she was working with, she was with the kids.
But you didn't want to, you wouldn't have thought, oh, I'm going to go do this in person, I'll wait.
Oh, no, she wouldn't let me, she wouldn't leave me alone.
She was like, what, you
No,
you
dude,
me.
She was kept calling me, and I was like, we'll handle it later. No, she said, no, what is it I don't know about you, Terry Crews? What is it? That's, dude, I'm going, and I knew the whole time. And that's what caused it. You understand? She wasn't giving up. She was like, I mean, can you imagine? I'm like, in her place, she knows something's up. Like, what? Yeah. I'm telling her to wait on it. And she's like, what about?
She knows.
No, I need to know now. And then when she found out, she's like, I'm out. That's it. Goodbye. And my friend said, hey, man, I cannot promise you that you're going to get your wife and family back. But you need to get better for you. And I remember it goes back into this. That sounded selfish. Didn't it sound? It sounds selfish.
Yeah.
You need to get better for you.
For you.
And I went, yeah, but what about her? And he's, hey, man, she's gone.
Yep.
But what are you going to do about you? And I went, yeah, because it is me. Oh, man. Yeah. And so I went, and for the first time, I went into therapy and started talking about my issues and what, you know, the pleaser in me, this and this, why I wasn't able to tell. I couldn't tell people no. I was like, yeah. I'd be like, yeah, and lie to people. Like, yeah, it's going to happen, and just fade away, you know, and act weird. And I was like, wow. And talked to all these reasons why and started to understand myself. And my wife, slowly but surely, after a few months, started to see me becoming this new person. And again, we were broke up. It wasn't, but she said, I'm going to give you another shot. I couldn't believe it. Now, how? I'm going to be real, man.
Yep.
It could have went either way.
Yeah.
Now, the fact that we aren't divorced, I think it was like a ball on a fence that could have fell on the divorce side or fell on the together. And mine happened to fall on, that's why I don't ever look at people who are divorced as like, oh man, you, moral failure. But man, come on, man.
No, yeah.
People making decisions. Like, my wife made the decision. That was up to her. It wasn't up to me.
Did you have fear that you were going to lose her? Like, was there a realization after you realized what you had done? Oh my gosh, I'm going to lose the love of my life, the one woman that stayed by me, my everything. You had that realization?
Absolutely. That's why I said I'm never going to tell it.
Yeah.
But the fact that I was even in that situation, the fact that I put myself in that situation.
How long were you separated for? Or?
It was probably 2 months. But it was wild because we were still, I was working and all that. But she saw, I went straight from work, like in New York, into therapy, like in another place, in a whole other state.
What were you filming then?
That was Are We There Yet? That TV show, yep. Ice Cube and yep. The whole thing. And we shot it in Connecticut.
So you're filming this whole thing and your whole world is on the outside.
But men, we compartmentalize. Like when I go to work, I shut everything off.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Like, yeah. Well, when I was going through my divorce, it was brutal to a point where I was doing my radio show from Australia because we were in court and I had to go to Australia and do the court. And I was doing the radio show into Dubai. So I would go to court in the morning and then at midday do my morning radio show here in Dubai from Australia. But you're right. There's something about it. I don't know.
You got more focused.
Yeah, yeah. You just lock it in. You know, this is what I've got to do. Let's do it.
Yep.
And then we battle what we've got to battle the next
this
day.
This is how we do war.
Yeah.
You know, you go into war, you have to forget you have a family back home.
Yeah.
You know, or you're not going to make it. You're just going to sit under a tree and be like, I can't do it.
Yeah.
But to move around and do your thing, you say all that stuff later. And that's what I did until we got back together and I had to put it on its feet. And it took years, man.
Was there resentment? Were there comments?
Yeah.
There'd be snide comments?
Oh, all that. Oh, brother, I would wake up and my wife would be standing over me. And I'm like, uh-oh, is she going to kill me? Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But she'd just be in tears. Or you come home and she's hurt and she's crying and you know you did it. That's bad. But what I would do is just own it. See, owning. Remember, the king, you got to own what you did wrong. That was my bad. Me, I did that. Instead of owning just the good stuff, you got to own the bad. And I would tell her, I'm sorry. And trust is earned.
Yeah.
And so I needed time. Over time, I had to earn all that trust back. Over and over again. Now we 16 years
later, it's...
And it's better than ever, man. Good. Wait, actually it's to the point where I'm glad we weathered that because it strengthened our bond. And what people don't understand is that usually super difficult times strengthen the bonds. Yeah. This is why, again, people in war, they connect with each other, you know. And just like... Every person, every marriage, I think, has to go through this certain thing. Not as far as I
went. You don't have to, but if things are too good,
right.
I feel
not real.
A guy that I knew when I was going through my divorce, we were talking about our wives, and I was going through the divorce. I said, "You ever argue with your wife?" He's like, "We don't argue, man." I said, "What do you mean we don't argue? We don't argue." And that I was envious of that because I'm like, man, I just came out of a relationship where we were arguing a lot. Obviously, it ended in divorce. But the fact that he never argued, about 4 years later, he got a divorce. There was zero communication. There was no argument because there was nothing there.
That's what it means.
So I believe now having arguments, it's healthy for a relationship to a certain extent.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
Like respectful arguments.
No, exactly.
It's okay.
Oh man. Look, you know what's bad? Is that like you say, you used to snide comments?
Yeah.
You know, like, oh, Mr. Terry Crews. Everybody loves Terry Crews. You're like, what did you just say?
Yeah.
Hey. And you know, let me tell you. I got a great story, man. We had one of our anniversaries that happened after this. It was probably 8 years after what we call D-Day. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So we were out to dinner and she's like, you're not talking to me correctly. I don't like it. I was like, what are you talking about? I was like, this is our anniversary and we're at the restaurant and the whole thing. She said, you know, I want to go. I was like, you know what? Here's a valet ticket. I'll see you. See you later. And she grabbed the valet ticket and went out and left. Took the car. I said, I'll Uber home. Thanks. And it was wild because all the people in the restaurant were watching.
Terry Crews just got.
Oh, they were like, ooh, because they knew it was my anniversary. You know, you telling everybody it's your anniversary. You know, you like, I want the anniversary reservation, right? And they're like, his wife just left.
Did TMZ pick up on it?
It was brutal, man. And I sat there and they're like, well, I'll never forget, the waitress walks up. She's like, are you still? I said, yep, I'm going to eat what I ordered.
Oh, my God.
So they bring this thing, and I'm like, all by
myself,
right?
You're going all through it. You're like, I'm staying.
Wait, and then I leave, I pay the bill, I get in the Uber, and I say, I want some frozen yogurt. So I stopped by this place and got some frozen yogurt. And I'm going, you know, it's my anniversary, you know? Right? I go home, she's sitting on the couch, watching TV, boom, boom, boom. I walk over, got next to her. I said, you good? She said, I'm good. Man, I knew we'd be together forever. You see that?
Yeah.
It was argument.
Yeah, but it was, it's the way
but
that you,
it's like, it's you're okay to do, you know what? You're free.
Yeah.
So if you want to leave, you can go, but well, I'm not going anywhere. Are you going anywhere? It's just like, no. Man. Woo. I'm sorry, man.
Don't be sorry. That's
deep. No, I'm just saying that's what it's about. Like, you go, wow. Everybody wants to see, like, we're traveling. We're in a, me sitting on that couch with my head on her shoulder. I was like, there's nowhere else I want to be, man. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? It's like, that was the best anniversary we ever had. And we've had some big ones, like big parties, a big thing. That one, I knew we'd be together forever. And that's like, now there's no deal breakers ever. You know what I'm saying?
Sure.
So good, Chris.
I love that. I think as you get older, and as I think for men especially, I think we realize how simple life could be and can be. And I think we sometimes overcomplicate things by our own behavior.
Yeah.
And you know, I'm now remarried, and I said to Brianna, my wife, I said, you've got a better version of me. You have a better version of me than my first wife did. Because I've learned so much. I've learned more about myself. I've learned how to handle situations better.
Yeah.
And I've realized that, yeah, marriage is something that, it's not for everyone, but if you do find the right person, and obviously you found the right person.
That's it.
That you do, there's nothing in the world than you want more than to spend that rest of your life with that person.
Hey man, I don't know where she ends and I begin.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it's literally we're tied together forever. This is it. You know, it's to the end, all the way, me and her. I love it.
All right, White Chicks 2, are you in it?
Yes. Yes, as soon as they're filming, I'm there. Okay, I promise you that.
Changed your life, that film? That scene? Is it the scene? What was it?
It's the whole thing, man. It was one thing you have to understand about that movie. Well, because there's a time where, you know, as an actor, you're always doubting yourself. I'll never forget that. I did a movie called Serving Sarah. This was with Matthew Perry a long time ago, and the director was Reginald Hudlin. And I would go up to the director, is that okay? Was that okay? He was like, yeah, it's good. I was like, I don't think I was okay. Is that okay? Every 5 minutes, he said, Terry, it's okay. If I said cut, it's okay. I'll never forget him saying that. And I was like, oh.
Why were you saying that?
Because I'm doubting myself. I didn't believe in myself. So you feel like a fake. You know, the whole imposter syndrome.
Yeah.
You feel like, oh, man, they're going to fire me. You know, they don't know. Let me tell you, I got to the point, you know, I'd done enough where... And it was so unbelievable when I got on that set. I said, it was a moment I said, I can do this. Like,
this on the White Chicks.
It's all the way up until that point in my career, it was always like, I'm not an actor. I don't know. I didn't act until I was 30. So, but by that time, I'd been around and been doing enough and seeing stuff. But White Chicks, I was like, I can do this. And let me tell you, to be picked, hand-picked by Keenan Ivory Wayans gave me all the endorsement I needed, because I was the biggest Keenan Ivory Wayans fan from In Living Color, the whole thing. I was a football player watching that stuff, and I was like, wow. And he was like, Terry, go ahead, man. You do it, brother. You go in there and just do it, man. And I was like, okay. And bro, you guys said every scene I was doing, it was like, everything. It just, the lines rolled out. It was like, you know, oh, it was crazy,
this
man.
This is infamous. Like, it's an, I mean, it's an iconic movie. And it's crazy because before they announced that they were going to do number two, we were talking about it on the radio. We're like, do you think they're allowing it? Would it be okay to do it again now? Because things have changed so much.
Oh, no. First of all, cancel? It's the last movie I'll ever do.
Why?
Okay? Because it's, go ahead and cancel me after this because I'm going. Wait, it's going to be raw. Like, so, we're going to make it so you are offended.
Okay.
And you're going to hurt.
But I want that.
And then I'll drop the mic and walk off into the distance. I'll live it. But see, I'll be in Dubai, everybody. Good night.
We'll love you.
Good night, everyone. Right.
But that, because it's going to, yeah, because.
I'm going all out.
I mean, I'm watching old episodes of Seinfeld, which is one of my favorite shows. And I'm like, whew. You can't say
that. You can't
that.
Say that. You
did they really say that on global
brother,
TV?
I'd be like, I'll never forget, man, walking in there. Ooh, it must be summertime in the Hamptons. Ooh, because it is snowing up in here. Ooh, Tony, hand me my boots because I'm about to go skiing. You know, like, whoa. Dude.
You couldn't.
People were like, oh. You got to understand, though, they were behind the camera going.
Loving it.
Because it hit. It was, I mean, people knew a guy like Latrell. Latrells exist.
Yeah.
And it was like, well, he's all about him. And this is another thing, which is funny, because people say, oh, it showed real range. Like, for me, I love the fact that Latrell is not like Julius, is not like Terry Jeffords, is not like Cheeseburger Eddie. And I was so, I said, I could. Like, I can do this. Mm. I can give you this, that, ooh, ooh, I can give you all the magic. You know what I mean? And you know, because you got to understand, too, acting is this kind of art where, you know, Juilliard and have you done Shakespeare? No? No, you haven't? Okay. You know, that kind of stuff. And I was like, no, but see, there's artsy and there's fartsy. Fartsy pays for artsy.
Explain that. Artsy?
Artsy? You know, like they say artsy, fartsy.
Ah, yeah.
But fartsy pays for artsy. Artsy. Because, you know, the money makers
is that
are white chicks.
Yeah.
That pays for all your little Shakespeare in love. Yeah. And, we're doing another a play. Yeah. They don't make no money.
Yeah, it's white chicks energy. Make the money. It's Liar Liar, Jim Carrey made the money.
You see what
I
mean?
It's those iconic movies. Do you, I mean, when you hopefully do it again, which we can't wait to see, you're just going to go in there the same person? It'll be the same role? Like, will you pick it up?
I'll know more. I know more.
Okay.
And I'm going in.
Right.
Like, again, there's a way to do everything, but what I want to do is, and this is what I love, is follow the vision.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when Keenan would set me out on the way, and I was like, I'm gonna give him something that makes, you know, you have to understand, I did that song in the car one time. He didn't know my little choreography. They didn't know anything.
The Vanessa Carlton, A Thousand Miles.
The 1,000 miles scene in the car was done once. And Keenan went, it's over. That's it. We got it. Oh no, that's no need to do it again. Nope. We got it. Is it in the can? We got it.
Wow.
And I said, whoa!
Nailed it.
When you make Keenan do that, and he knows, he wrote for Eddie Murphy. And so you're talking about somebody who knows and lives it. I said, man, listen, when you've been given moments like that, I'm ready to come back. And now I want to find out what you want now, Keenan. Let's go.
Have you ever spoken to Vanessa Carlton?
Oh, yes. I mean, we're good friends. Vanessa loves me. And she's like, you have permission to sing my song anywhere, anytime. She's the sweetest lady. She actually sent me some of her new music, which is awesome.
She's like, can you sing it?
Yeah,
I need a hit.
Oh, you know Vanessa's going to be part of the White Chicks too. That's what's so good.
I hope. I mean, yeah, I think maybe she needs a cameo in it or something.
I know.
Brother, we could be talking for, I think, the next 4 hours.
Oh, sure.
I just want to say thanks for coming through.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
I'm honored, man. Listen, Chris, you're awesome, brother. You're awesome. And my thing is, I always, like I said, I protect my environment. And I always know, there are people that I say, I need to know him. You know, and you're one of those people. I was like, we just gotta break bread, we gotta hang, we just gotta do that. So I'm so happy to do that,
man,
and know you personally.
Thank you. And I feel like sometimes, you know, in our later lives, we meet the right people.
Yeah.
And even though you've met them now, you can still feel like you've known them for a while. And it's crazy because I feel like I know you so well. The kind of real Terry Crews, not the Crews that I saw watching up. You're an icon, mate. Keep doing what you're doing. Please come back. Please spend more time in Dubai. I mean, I know you're getting there. Shout out to Bugatti, because without the Bugatti family, I don't think we would have probably ever crossed paths.
It's true. The Bugattis, I love them.
I'm glad that you're here. I'm glad you're doing more. And as we say here, have you learned Inshallah yet? Inshallah, have you picked up that one yet?
Not yet.
Like God willing.
I've heard it.
Inshallah, we get you more here.
Oh, I love that.
Terry Crews, thank you.
Thank you, Chris.